This podcast is from the IDPF Digital Book 2012 Conference at Book Expo America.
I know it's been a long and fascinating day, and we have to end a fascinating panel on the subject of libraries and e-books. This is something that, hello, I'm Jim Lichtenberg. I've been on the board of BISG for a long time and also IDPF. Libraries and e-books is a subject that has its contentions, and it, maybe we'll even get into that a little bit. But our panelists, and I'm delighted to introduce them in the order they're going to be speaking. Ian Singer is our first panelist. He is a vice president, group publisher for Library Journal and School Library Journal. He will be followed by Erica Lazzaro, who is general counsel at Overdrive, one of the major providers of online materials, and followed by George Coe, who's the president of Baker & Taylor. Ian, Erica, George, it's a real pleasure to have you here, and I will turn the meeting over to you.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here. Can you all hear me okay? All right. Well, I am not a book distributor, so I'm kind of more on neutral ground here, but I'm very interested in making sure that librarians have access, and their patrons, more importantly, have access to digital content. And in that regard, one of the key initiatives that Library Journal took upon ourselves this past year, with the support of Baker & Taylor, as well as ProQuest, Random House, and Roman & Littlefield, leaders in the industry of trying to understand how digital content is flowing, we put together it's the first time it ever happened, a national trending survey to identify what a patron persona looks like. And we did this because we wanted to try to get to evidence as to how patrons are using their libraries, looking at their libraries for products and services. And with our first editions, we were focusing on things digital. So patron profiles is a quarterly annual. National sampling of over 2,000 library patrons, and that's what I'm going to be talking about during this conversation. I think it's a nice lead-in to what we're going to be hearing from Erica and George as to what they're seeing as ebook distributors. And key to patron profiles is we're really trying to make sure that, as you can see up here, librarians are in the best position to embrace emerging trends to continue to deliver valuable support and content to library patrons. So one of the things, the kickoff is to impress upon you all the size of the U.S. public library market. Without getting into where these things all came from, it's a big market, not necessarily as large as a B2C play, but it is a buyer's market relative to content. It's a nonstop, content-driven market with a lot of buildings, over 169 million users, 69% of the U.S. population, and with good spend, almost $1 billion in book expenditures alone. And 82% offer ebooks. And we're seeing the library expenditures approaching $100 million on ebooks, with some of the larger publishers absent from that marketplace. So what I'm here to talk about, and we hear this, you know, it's a frictionless environment when we have things digital relative to library patrons. And it's a fiction. It's just not true. And the reason why it's not true is because even if things are being looked at or discovered online, library patrons aren't visiting libraries, they're still consuming a lot of content. And it's a discovery platform at the very least for those publishers or creators out there for your content. Also importantly, library patrons, as we've discovered, are book buyers. Most probably within the overall segment, the most active book buyers in the book buying marketplace. So again, taking the national persona, and I'm not going to get into those details. If you have questions on how it all works out and those statistics, happy to talk to you offline. But they're reading a general library patron, average patron, 22 books, and you can see they're also purchasing and borrowing books from the library. So it's not just a borrow and walk away. It's they're purchasing books that they've read. We'll get to some of that. And that last stat, they buy an average of 9 books a year. So now we're turning from a general library patron to an ebook patron profile. We took it to a specific level with our survey instrument. And this is your basic profile of an ebook reader. And I just seeing these what this is. Is anybody surprised by that? I mean, you all are in the digital space. Are you surprised by that information? It's pretty standard, I would say. And so, but what's really interesting is that this patron is a little bit younger than an actual a physical library patron, and they have more disposable income. We know that library patrons like all formats. You can see from this slide that print is still with this survey segment, a very preferred format. E-books that are on the rise with audio and digital downloads still viable. So across the board, they like their formats. And again, that goes to the fiction of friction. Is an e-book reader is still going to rely on print, particularly in the scenario where the e-book is not in the library. So this is, to my earlier point, libraries serve as discovery platforms. So in terms of library patrons, those folks who are actively looking at their library, they're finding books, media, through their library, first and foremost, whether it's online or physical. And then you can see, in terms of their preferences, whether they're getting recommendations from friends, online retailers, etc., folks who are attached to their library consistently use the library as the primary place of discovery, again, whether physical or virtual. Importantly, that discovery has a very high influence on purchasing behavior. So the orange slide is the ebook patron, and the general slide is all users. And regardless of the bar or graphs, these are still extraordinarily high numbers. Using the library to discover new writers or try out new genres, very high on the ebook side, and very high as well on all users. So that's the fiction. People who are relying on their libraries for entirely new authors, entirely new genres. In terms of purchasing, they're actually purchasing books by an author that they previously borrowed, whether it's a gift or we don't know the answer as to why, but that's the number. And that's, again, if you're borrowing a book and then you know that proportion is actually buying a book or an ebook, publishers aren't losing revenues off of print necessarily if their models are right. And then purchase a specific book previously borrowed from the library. So I mentioned before, what's going to happen if the book's not there? Well, again, using the same ebook patron, all users, they'll wait till the item's available on the print side. It's interesting to see the velocity. The ebook folks might not be. And one of the reasons why they're not going to wait is because a lot of that inventory might not be there for them, as Erica and George will talk about. I mean, some of the publishers just aren't engaging in the same way. Oops, sorry, hit the wrong way. So, as I said earlier, it's a nascent but developing market. And in 2011, public libraries on average carried 4,000 e-books. And they would probably carry more if more were available from leading publishers. There are certainly platforms out there that are providing the books, and there are certainly patrons out there who want them. So here was a question that we asked relative to ebook readers. Have you ever borrowed an ebook from your library? And a good chunk said no, whether they didn't have the right format, whether the library wasn't marketing their services properly, or whether they didn't have a device to actually use and they've been reading it on computers. But we do know they want more, particularly ebook patrons. They want to read more, and they want them to be available. I mean, that bottom number, 85% of ebook patrons polled want more ebooks available at their public library. And when you correlate that to the earlier slides where I was pointing to the fact that there's buying, there's discovery, then there's buying of books read, that's where, we've heard it over and over, the fiction of friction, well, something's not jiving there. The reality is that these patrons will consume more content overall. Here's a quick breakdown for those of you who are on the platform side or the device side. This is who's using what. And we're going to be trending this information, and it's going to be interesting to see how those numbers change or don't as time goes on. hearing Apple breaking into the textbook marketplace, things like that. We'll see how this thing all starts playing out. And then, again, to further point out what is not happening, we took a look and asked library patrons, what are they doing on other public library sites? There's concern that patrons can go to other public libraries and download ebooks for free without even visiting that library. And that's just not true. Turns out a very small number, one out of 100 library patrons are going outside of their public library, and really about 5 out of 100 ebook patrons are doing that. And they're doing it to find more information, whether it's searching the catalog or using special databases. Very few are using other social, using blogs or et cetera. But importantly, very few are downloading other ebooks. So my key takeaways are, the library needs to be engaged. The library market needs to be engaged. It has money to spend. It has patrons who are committed to using the library both online and physically to find more content of yours. They are ubiquitous. It's a discovery system that we know patrons engage, particularly those who are active library patrons. I mentioned Discovery Zone for readers. It's a proven marketing engine. And now for those publishers who are thinking about whether to engage the library market, now is the time for experimentation. We're going to be hearing from leading library vendors. There are librarians out there who are developing their own systems, exclusive of these distributors we're going to hear from, to make sure that they're delivering the best content they can for their patrons. So, again, my takeaway is engage. The library market is an active, viable spending channel for your content. So turn it over to Erica.
Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Erica Lazzaro, and I'm Overdrive's General Counsel, and I'm happy to be part of this panel with my fellow panelists here, and thanks, Ian, for kind of setting the stage as far as looking at the users that library patron service or library service, and really having one of the first published studies that I know Team Overdrive was excited about to analyze the behaviors, particularly of the ebook users. I'm going to cover brief background about Overdrive, who we are and how we fit into this space. We really do work with a lot of different stakeholders in the industry. And then just set a baseline as to when I talk about the library market, who I mean, who these customers include, and a little bit of forward-looking information about how we're working with our customers and stakeholders on how to best service the marketplace, whether it be from the publisher side or librarians and their patrons. Overdrive is headquartered in Cleveland, Ohio. We're a digital distributor, as was mentioned previously. So we work with publishers and other content providers to sell digital content, ebooks, audiobooks, music, video, variety of formats, and we sell to retailers, we sell to libraries, and we sell to schools and a number of different outlets. We also work with publishers who want to sell direct to consumer. It really is, as we've heard on previous panels, a global marketplace, and customers include with locations all over the world with a primary market dominance in North America, especially on the institutional side. So the institutional market includes public libraries, as we've mentioned a few times, but also the K-12 school market, universities, and then what we call special libraries. So that's corporate libraries and knowledge centers, as well as governmental libraries. Just for baseline, libraries on the digital side provide access to their communities, to their patrons, to a catalog of digital content sourced from a variety of sources. And this material can be checked out using a valid library card. So it doesn't require it doesn't require entering the library, the physical library. It requires visiting a website, using a library card to transact with the library, check out digital material. Libraries pay for this content. So yes, it's maybe free to the end user patron, but the libraries are paying eventually the publishers for access to this material. So it's not this free, unfettered access. It is a there is money to be had here, as Ian was mentioning, that this is a viable channel here. OverDrive and the libraries themselves work very closely to cull their collection. It's called collection development. This is, librarians are professionals who have master's degrees trained to do this, and they develop their collection to best service their patron communities. So we heard on previous panels how it really is a local endeavor. It's a local endeavor for the independent bookstores. So too for the local branches of the libraries. They pay attention to what's circulating, what's not, and they make digital content selections based on that. So in other words, they do merchandising. This is similar to what booksellers and publishers, this is libraries do this on their physical shelves as well as on their digital shelves. Business models. This is a catalog of some of those that are existing in the marketplace. The first one many are familiar with, which is very similar to the physical world, in that's a one title, one user model. One copy, one virtual copy is available for checkout to one patron at a time. If a library buys multiple copies, then more than one patron can check it out at a time. Another option is more like a subscription model, where a library selects a group of titles and on an annual basis has access to that material. Other models that exist and that are available for libraries based on perhaps publisher requirements are those of circulation limits, where after a set number of checkouts, the title is no longer available. Another is term limits, so that's more like a fixed perhaps year period, where after a set number of years, the title is no longer available unless the library selects another copy. And yet another is library edition pricing. There's also pilots going on. This is more tailored towards the K-12 market with classroom sets. So to provide access to a group, to a selection of content for a set period of time, whether it's semester or throughout the life of a project in the school setting. OverDrive has been doing its own experimentation with a group of libraries who realize the traffic and the channel that they represent. And working closely with libraries and our partner publishers to hit on one of the buzzwords of the day, discoverability. So making sure that the collection of materials that libraries have selected get discovered by patrons, and the benefit to publishers is having their mid and backlist get discovered. So some examples of that include actually exposing the entire catalog of publishers' content to a library patron, even if the library hasn't selected all of those catalogs. So that's just additional exposure for the mid and backlist, as well as reserving space on participating libraries' web pages for ads. So that's an example from Boston Public Library, where the top bar is an ad for a featured book. And a third way we're doing that is to create partnerships with retail affiliates and stores. And I know my colleague Baker and Taylor has done projects with this through My Library Bookstore, where they create for the physical materials, a place for libraries to earn an affiliate fee. Libraries, some had existing relationships with Amazon where they were an affiliate. And so we're establishing relationships with both local and national and traditional retailers to to create this affiliate relationship through the library, and here's a list of a few at Boston Public, including Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, Amazon, Powell's, and others. So the upside for the library is a revenue share from the affiliate sales that result, and of course the booksellers get that increased traffic from the click-throughs. So picking up on a point that Ian covered, we are, as I mentioned, we're very excited about the release of the patron profile study in particular, because it legitimized something that Overdrive always knew was true, that library patrons are book buyers and that they do pull out their credit card and transact, you know, for paid content. And that libraries really are a place for discovery and generation of interest and activity around titles and connecting, you know, readers and authors. And, you know, that's really one of the big value propositions. So Overdrive wanted to dig down into that a little bit deeper, and we started to mine the data that we were sitting on top of through our network of library systems. And in March, we authored our first study on this data and, you know, jumping on the big data bandwagon. And we did a select summary of the number of impressions that the cover images were generating, the number of people who were sampling publishers, you know, free samples, and where, you know, the entry and exit points, and some of that user behavior activity that we anticipate publishers care about, and certainly we cared about, to not only improve the user experience and hopefully enable more patrons to check it out and work with our library partners to, you know, address that issue, but also then eventually to propose to create these reports and share them with our publishing partners so they can get additional information that on this user activity and the journeys. So this is a snapshot. This hasn't been released yet, but this is a first-time preview of April 2012 numbers. And in a summary sense, you know, this is a month's worth of activity, 139 million page views, 14 page views per visit, and, you know, over 10 minutes spent on the site. So patrons are really drilling down into Overdrive-hosted sites and, you know, looking through the lists and clicking on subject categories and spending time there. And following on something that Ian mentioned is this is a highly desirable audience. They have a lot of disposable income. Some of this, the reason we know about the audience is through some surveying as well. Libraries can choose to put surveys on their website, and we get some metrics from that. Looking at specifics, cover image impressions, no surprise that Harry Potter takes up most of the list for April, because that's when it went live in the library channel exclusively with Overdrive. The top 10 market areas, again, not a surprise as far as metro and population bases, New York, Seattle, Philadelphia, and Chicago rounding out the top four. Looking at the hold, so for those materials that are available on that one title, one user basis, if the title is not available for checkout, the patron, the end user's next option is to place themselves on a waiting list or on a holds queue. They, again, have to enter in their library card number to be added to the list. And here you see a summary of the top 10 holds gathering titles for the month of April, with no surprises here on the top ones. Looking ahead to kind of extend this notion of discoverability and libraries as a place for connecting, Overdrive is releasing a series of APIs, and these will be open APIs, meaning that we will make them available to a number of different vendors and stakeholders, and of course our library partners in the industry, to again, just have this sharing of data. The use of APIs by libraries in particular is not really a new thing. I found an example of Dallas Public Library, who for a few years has been using the New York Times API to create the New York Times bestseller list. With one click, you're able to drill down into their catalog and check availability. That's for the physical copies, but you know, their libraries are already using these to provide access to the content. As I mentioned, they will be open. We found out recently that in at least one case, court ruled that Oracle's APIs were not copyrightable. I mean, the judge was clear to limit his ruling to the APIs in question, but this is a notion that it's important to have the reciprocity of data sharing, because as I stated, the value proposition to the publishers is the discoverability and the metrics that we're providing and garnering from our library patrons. So making sure it's that kind of two-way street is important for those who license our APIs. We expect that the audience for these will be, of course, our library customers, as well as ILS vendors, the people who manage the library's catalogs and availability of their holdings, as well as retailers and publishers, too, who perhaps want to use it to sell direct to consumer and pull their own metadata to feature on their website. We are excited to be offering an additional way to hopefully, with less friction, make content available in a browser-based reader. So here, too, extending the reach of content using an HTML5-based reader. And this is, we heard on the main stage, Inkling is one example of a HTML5 browser-based reader. This platform will be available to our institutional customers, our libraries, and our retailers as well. Benefits is, again, removing that app installation, perhaps the activation. There will be DRM in this ecosystem. It's not DRM-free, but it really is a pretty dynamic way to have access to the content with one click. Our tagline is See Book, Read Book. And from the library side, it does give the ability to, with one click, have a sample. So again, getting out there on perhaps their Facebook page with sampling and other activity around the book and marketing. And it's something that we're going to be previewing at the booth on the show floor at Book Expo. In summary, yep, I'm wrapping up. I'll just jump on the bandwagon that Ian started, that it really, libraries do represent a significant sales opportunity for publishers. For those publishers in the room who are participating and supporters of the library market, we thank you and we appreciate your good work. We are partners to a lot of stakeholders in this industry, and we're on the show floor in 4340. Thank you.
Thank you, Erica, very much. Let me point out that both Baker and Taylor and Overdrive are platinum sponsors of the meeting, and so thank you very much, guys. It really makes a big difference. Everyone knows we have a hard stop at 5:45, so hopefully we'll have time for some questions.
That's a cue.
Well, the benefit of going last is I can blow by the stuff that everybody did a great job covering, so that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to focus on how you can monetize the library business for your own benefit and your content and where the migration is going. So I may go past a couple slides that people have talked about in relationship to the market size and those types of things. So bear with me if I happen to skip a couple slides as we go through it. Okay, 2-minute commercial on Baker & Taylor. As many of you know, we're the largest distributor of content in the library market. We ship about 70% of the public library content in the United States today, and we ship about 97% of the content in the academic libraries. We share some of that space in terms of schools, but worldwide we have distribution centers. We have 5 distribution centers in the United States. We have 1 in the UK, 2 in Mexico, 1 in Australia, and 1 in Asia. So we focus on mostly public and academic. So many of you who are STM publishers or academic publishers, we focus on that. Most of our digital distribution today is in the academic market. A couple words on that. You can see the migration is happening quite quickly. This is some statistics that we got from a college professor here in the university, and it kind of talks about where the simultaneous publication and the spend is happening. This is not market specific. This is specific to the type of genre and where this product is being distributed. So the two areas that I'm really focusing on as college and professional, you can see that the distribution in the academic movement is moving quite rapidly. Today, academics buy 25% of their material is electronic monographs. So the migration is happening. 2 years ago, it was 7%. That's how quick it is today that the appetite of college students are looking for digital material out of their libraries. On the public space, which is up on the top, is trade. That is really the trade in the LHI market. That's not necessarily distribution to the public space. It's all about the devices. As the migration and the penetration and affordability of devices grow, so will the growth in the public library and the school market happen. This is just a quick chart about what's happening with circulation. You can see circulation has basically doubled from 1 year to the other. This is another thing about size of collections. I'm going to size this for you. If you look at the mean of the number of units in public libraries, 1,500, and today, or last year, it was 4,300. If you use that growth of 284%, the marketplace at 72 to 73 million today, next year is going to be 150, the year after that is going to be 250, and the year after that is going to be about 420 million, which is about 35 to 40% of the monograph spent. So when you look at high volume material in public libraries, it's really about trade and some of the esoteric material. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. So Erica talked about on holds. This is the key to the migration of libraries. Libraries don't have budgets to support public library usability. They just can't afford it. It's a one book, one user model that's going to stay that way in the digital sense for the public library, is that when a library buys the number of copies, their on holds go up immediately, particularly with high visible New York Times types bestseller material. So the ratio that many libraries like to say that they're following is a 6-to-1 ratio. They'd like to. But it's extremely difficult with the spend level that they can. If you take some of the local libraries that we distribute here, New York, Queens, Brooklyn Public Library, they'll buy thousands of copies. And within weeks, they have holds at 200 or 300% of what they have to circulate. So it's virtually impossible for them to buy deep enough in order to satisfy their demand. So where the migration and holds leads us to is how much am I going to buy digital versus how much am I going to buy physical? And that's what we're all about. We're focusing on managing our customers, satisfying the growth in the digital spend. So if I buy 1,000 copies of a New York Times bestsellers today, its majority of it is physical. But there's many, many people, as Erica showed you, pinging those databases, wanting that digital copy. And as more and more people get devices, the library has to understand that demand level. So we're trying to guide them to that regard. They're never going to satisfy the total demand they are, but they certainly have to pay attention to the new card holders in the library, which are digital as well, as they got that new device and they're excited to get that and see what's happening. And what happens in terms of promotion is that they can't get it because it's on hold and they're going to put their name on there, so they're going to look for alternative genre or alternative material. So that's another way to promote your copies retrospectively when they're waiting for the most current bestseller. They can look at authors, they can look at genres that they normally don't read because they're, as we all said, they're power buyers. They're not just looking for copies to circulate, they're also going to buy the copy as well. Again, I'm going to buy this. This is just talking about growth and usability here. this particular one just talks about where libraries are going to spend their money over the next several years in the 5 years. We are set on being prepared to provide the platforms that libraries need, not just from a collection development perspective, but from an analytical one. You know, libraries try to analyze their circulation statistics in terms of understanding what they want to buy. We have an analytical company that literally analyzes their usability of circulation between hardcover and digital. And those things are called automatic ship plans. And virtually every supplier has one. And driving automatic ship plans based on usability and demand and on holes is what's going to happen. We're going to profile your content. We're going to look at usability, and we're automatically going to ship your content based on the demands of format. How much physical do you need, and how much electronic you need? And every library is looking for that type of assistance. Just a statement of as we see the growth in the next several years for academic libraries. You know, academics are, I would be surprised in the next 5 years that we have a physical book for academics. In the public library space, yeah, in the public library space, it's going to be about 30%. It could be even higher than that, depending on the adoption of devices and the usability and how ergonomic they are. One thing that we do have is the heartbeat of what is being produced today. Baker and Taylor, in partnership with KNFB, developed an e-reader called Blio. Many of you know about Blio, so I won't spend a lot of time about it. But we are the featured reader on virtually every manufacturer that produces a device in the marketplace today. So just to focus on the bottom line, if you look at iPad, 35 million to 95 million in 2015, other vendors, 10 million to 143 million. Somebody's buying those devices, and they're looking for content that satisfies the usability of that. So the whole device market from 2011 to 2015 is virtually going to double. A lot of competition, a lot of cost-effective devices, a lot of apps, and a lot of software is going to be available today. So people want to walk down the street who normally don't use the library today, get on their apps, search a user such as OverDrive, ourselves, or other applications are out there, look for content, and they're going to download it as they're walking down the street in New York City. And that's how prevalent it's going to be. But it's providing promotion, and believe me, it's not eating in consumer sales. Many of our publishers are concerned about that. A book is a book. So I'll repeat that. A book is a book in the sense that I can only circulate it to one person at one time. It's no different than a physical book. I get it, I hold it, have it for 21 days, I return it. Electronic book provides a little bit ease of use. I go down it, I download it, I hold it for 21 days, it goes out. So I can't buy more books. I just satisfy a different appetite. I'm able to promote your material to different users. And we'll go through some of the economics on the buy button that we... again, this is another thing that BISAC produced, and really what this is saying that free copies or promotional copies promote sales because it offers more exposure in search and discovery. Erica talked about our buy now button. Well, we literally have 250 libraries today in the physical world that we drop ship for. So if you get on a large library and you're looking for a particular copy of a book and there's a list of 50 people in front of you, you're not going to wait. You hit the buy button. It goes into a hosted branded site, branded for the library. It's a cooperative site with Baker and Taylor and the library. We share the proceeds. We drop ship the book. As many of you know, we're one of the largest CDF displayers, customer direct fulfillers for Amazon and many of the big boxes. So we drop ship using that service on the physical sense for the library. Not only that can we do that, but in our application, which we call Access 360, it is a digital platform managing circulation and providing collection development services for libraries to offer electronic content to their patrons. Not only does it circulate the content, but it also sells the content to those users. It's just one of our bookstores, Orange County Public Library in Orlando. This is a view of how we sell both physical and books. This is their site that's in operation today. So, opportunity, 169 million patrons using libraries, 9,300 potential bookstores out there, and an opportunity to ship 44 million books to the library market today. And that conversion is happening as we speak in the next 3 years. The digital conversion that would be most likely be half. I'm done. Thank you.
Well, thank you, all three of you, for terrific presentations. For the publishers in the room, I think maybe this provides a little insight and maybe even some relief from certain concerns. I think we have about 10 minutes for questions, so if someone would like to go to the mic or just raise your hands and we can take it from there. Yes, sir.
Is there a what?
A standard for DRM in public libraries?
Now, most of the secret sauce is driven by the local basis, whether it be Overdrive or ourselves. We put our own DRM at the wishes of publishers to ensure we manage the integrity of those books and the usability of those books.
Are there questions? Yes, sir.
I noticed on your slide with the data, it had the LHI market staying at 95.5 for all those years. Was there any...
That's compiled information that literally was given to us. I don't share that view, but I will tell you the obstacles of that view is when you look at the LHI market, particularly text, it's all about adoption. So whether the major textbook publishers go to a Switzerland platform or they try to fight territories out with their own platform is going to dictate the usability. I think you're going to see LMSs working toward providing customized content for the LHI market faster than the textbook market is, such as Blackboard or some of the others that you're familiar with.
Sir.
How is Overdrive approaching the browser-based readers with DRM?
How is Overdrive approaching?
You mentioned browser-based readers with DRM, right?
Yeah, well, there's still similar restrictions on copy and paste and some of the things that most are familiar with kind of Adobe ACS model. So those restrictions as well as time expiring still exist with the browser base.
But it's still it's the browser doing the transformation, the decryption of the DRM, or it's a proprietary plugin to the browser?
It's additional. I mean, it's, as George said, the secret sauce. So, you know, if there's additional details you want on that, happy to talk to you offline.
Yes, sir.
I've read about the Douglas County Libraries and Internet Archive, or two, being interested in a pure sale as opposed to a license with implications for first sale doctrine. And I just wonder what you think the implications for library lending over the long term might be and how broadly the library support that initiative.
If I understand your question, Douglas County wants to acquire the material as ownership for the right to distribute under their digital rights?
There's actually a library journal that's a forum that's coming up, a webinar, in about 10 days. And so I based my statement about Douglas County Libraries on the basis of that material.
Yeah, and I alluded to what Douglas is trying to do, to be clear, is as opposed to working with an Overdrive or a Baker & Taylor, they're working to set up their own platform. So they're still going to buy the content, and they're not going to give it away. But that's the key differentiation here is these are platforms that the library doesn't necessarily own. Douglas is working to build its own platform and consume its own metadata feeds and content from by working independently with publishers.
But why is the sale concept important to that? Why couldn't they look to work directly on the license basis?
They're working publisher to publisher, setting up the same fundamental relationships as any distributor is. They're working.
I thought that they were looking for true ownership in the way that Internet Archive, for example, is definitely looking for.
Right. No. It's the challenge really is around the platform and having the flexibility themselves to do what they want with the content, with whatever they can negotiate with the publishers.
Right.
And to be clear, they're an Overdrive customer, so it's not exclusive of Overdrive or perhaps Baker & Taylor. So they're doing that with, I know, some local Colorado-based publishers and some of the smaller presses. And
yeah.
A lot of people are watching them on.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. It's contingent on whether a publisher, if you're in the publishing business, want to have 9,400 zones that are going to manage your DRM. And to make sure that the integrity of your usability is there. Plus, by owning the content, circulating the content, and selling the content, there are two or three different models that publishers have for that distribution, whether it's an agency model or whether it's a wholesale model.
It's going to be a challenge for anyone who wants to try and follow that and then keep up with all the technology that goes behind it. I commend Douglas if they can do it, but it's certainly a resource burner.
Sir, in the back.
Where do you see the international market among libraries? Is it similar to e-book sales in what international region?
Are we talking about distribution of U.S. content, or are we talking about distribution of foreign content? Their adoption is a little bit quicker, in my view, particularly on the academic side. I mean, when we look at, and I'll talk on the academic because that's the fastest moving because the model isn't the same worldwide. You know, there's only a few countries that adopt the same public library model that we have. But when you look worldwide, it's usually the university market that drives it from that sense. So when you look at Europe and you look at that, they are predominantly looking for digital distribution. The Middle East, for example, I mean, our distribution of physical books has dropped by 35% to 40% and will continue and replaced with content of, and which is a browser-based content for that matter, because most academic material is. In Australia, it's a mixed bag, you know, but it's more like us. Canada's more like us. But Asia, those marketplaces, they don't have the public library infrastructure that we do.
I had a question to the degree that people from overseas could borrow directly from, since once you're on the Internet, you're on the Internet, can they borrow from American libraries?
If you have a library card, you can.
Yeah, if you're an expat, I mean, and you relocated and you have a valid library card, but there still is that requirement to have that nexus to your library, so it's not
unfettered.
Correct.
Well, to be a little more transparent on this, it's not unfettered, but there are some libraries that you do not have to go to the library to get a valid ID card, but you do have to pay for access, to be very transparent on that.
Right. Thank you. Last question. Yes, ma'am.
Question for you. I really enjoy the patron profiles, the statistics you showed, but can you talk about the sample selection?
Sure. Right. So the partner that we use is through a ProQuest subsidiary, Bowker. They've been doing a number of studies with BISG, and the underlying survey instrument is provided by a company called Market Trends, which supports Fortune 100 consumer companies. So the sample size was about 24,000 survey blasts out, if you will, or touches, and we had over 2,200 survey respondents to each one, so a very high return. And we, to the greatest extent that we could, we tried to differentiate between respondents based on basic demographics so we could get a national persona. And the single opt-in question was, did you use your library in the past X amount of time? And that would trigger then further clarification points.
Well, thank you all very much. It's been a long day, and to reward you, I have learned that there are snacks and drinks where you got your lunch, so feel free, even if you're not attending the Ignite at 6 o'clock, you can still go and have some cookies. And I think another round of applause to an excellent panel.